Hello, and welcome to episode 204 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mouse from Mars, and I'm here with the creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the Bucky to our Steve Rogers is Tony Esmond.
How you doing? You're right.
We are all good.
And you sound better this week. You sounded like quite tired last week, like weary.
Yes.
I wonder why.
Yes. Yeah. Obviously, we've been resting up for a week after London MCM. And thank you to everyone that listened to last week's show that had some interviews, both from that show and from NCS. Great interviews, Tony, by the way.
Thank you, mate. It's very fantastic. Kind of you. Yeah, it was good fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yours are good as well. I like yours.
Oh, thank you.
It's typical. We're somewhere for 3 days and we fucking fanny around so much. You know what I mean? It's like, I remember panicking like on Sunday. You were sitting in my car trying to get time to fill it up with boxes and saying, did we get any audio, guys? Oh, thank God you got some.
Yeah, I ran around on the Sunday and got some. Yeah. But and the reason for my voice was because I was still recovering from that long, busy weekend, which we're going to talk about in a minute.
Yeah.
But thank you for joining us as we sit back and get ready to return to the normal format. I say normal. What is a format to us?
What's normal?
Exactly. I'll tell you what is good. It feels good to be talking to you guys again.
It does. Because I haven't had a proper talk to you since because I was in America for the one before that.
So yeah.
I've been a bit out of my sort of normal sort of thing, you know?
Yeah, being like strangers on a train.
Yeah.
Isn't that right, Dan? Yeah, I thought he wasn't there. he went so quiet.
Hello?
Hey!
He's back. I was saying stuff and it's like they can't bloody hear me. They're not reacting. It's like, that's why.
Yeah. Oh, no, they can't hear me. That's how I went.
Yes, but it's good for us all to be back. Even Dan, who's switched his mute off.
I
think the cable come unplugged on the blue ball thing.
Hey?
Snowball, not the blue ball.
What have you been looking at?
As you can tell, folks,
I was just desperately searching my phone for the Comic House update.
But who are Comic House, Dan?
They're the Netflix for comics.
Yes, and they're our sponsor. Yes, thank you to Comic House for joining us every week and putting up with us. They sponsor us, and they are the indie comic marketplace with a difference. There's a huge selection of titles on their database. Good to see some people online have started using it and putting their comics up this week.
Yeah, it's got that today, actually. That's
good. And if you self-publish your own books, then you can list your book on the website for free and start selling straight away. So it's another avenue to bring in that green. Well, I guess English money's not green, is it? I don't know. But they also have an app. We're the only people that don't have an app because we're cool. We're retro, aren't we? we're also terrible at sponsorship ads, but yes, a Comic House have an app which is fantastic. Like Dan says, it's like Netflix for comics, and they've got loads of titles on their database. What is there at the moment, Dan?
We've got the Catalyst, the Forrester Chair, and Those Forsaken There, which is Dark as Hell by James McCulloch, Megatomic Battle Robot 3, The Solitary Divide Issue 1, a comic that Tony reviewed in his month-long review thing, which we're going to talk about a bit later in the episode. Got The High Priestess Volume 1, Surrealsville 12, Comedy and Errors, Gallant and Amos Collected Adventures 1, Legendary Talespinners 2, Purgatory from the Dynamite series Issue 4.
Oh, okay. That's one of those sort of sexy Dynamite series, isn't it?
Yeah. Like the skin coloured like red or a primary colour with a black bikini on.
And just the nipples covered up. Well, Classic design.
It's what we all want.
Not on each other, to be fair.
Yeah.
That might put me off it altogether forever if I saw you two dressed like that.
Oh, dear. Yes, there's all that and more. And if you want a subscription to Comic House, it's only £3 a month. And you get access to all of that, including books like Awesome Comics, 1-3 is currently on there at the moment. Our comic,
there soon.
Which, the 4's going to be there soon. And Do you think we're that good at selling our own books? We'll get into how good we actually are
in a minute.
Shortly. But yeah, go to comichouse.com, find out about everything, and a 14-day free trial for the app, because you won't regret it. They also...
You won't regret it. That's like the best-selling point ever. Yeah, right. You won't feel dirty.
These days, when you sign up to things, you do regret most of them.
Yeah, you do. I sign up to nearly everything. I'm shit at like putting things in the spam box, and every day I delete the same emails from the same companies. I bought a T-shirt from America in 2010, and I'm still getting emails from this shitty company.
Why don't you just click unsubscribe on their newsletter?
I've done that, but it seems to just keep coming. I never subscribed in the first place. It's like one of those sort of ones.
Yeah.
Well, they just
hate them from Kickstarter. You know, you backed someone last year or so, and then you get updates about a project that they're doing.
Yeah.
So, why am I getting this?
Yeah.
Only backed the one comic.
I mean, you can. I can understand where they're coming from.
I have unsubscribed on a couple.
Yeah.
There was one I just subscribed, backed, and I think it's just about come through. But I was getting emails like on their new project, and it's something called Patriotica or something, and it's just some naked woman. So I was like, yeah, I'm down with this. No, but I unsubbed because I don't know. I'm not one of those comic people that's sort of like you're flogging a comic and like, oh, here's a stretch goal for 50 quid. It's a picture of the lead character with her boobs out. I don't really get that. If you want to pay that price, fine. But it's completely alien to me.
I bought a T-shirt off the internet this week. I bought Space Boss. I'll send you a picture of it.
That's fucking brilliant.
That's a Shaky Kane.
Shaky Kane's the governor, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
It's good.
I mean, it would have been nice. I just want to see you smile on a photograph, Tony. That's all I want.
I like to make that face, don't I?
Yeah, it's good. It's a good face. Served you well.
Have you always had that face, Tony?
I hate to say, but yeah.
Yeah. One thing
grown into it.
Yeah.
One thing we do have this week is a little bit of a competition.
Oh yeah. Did we decide that? Because you said to us, what should we do as a question? And we both sent you sort of flippant and sarcastic answers. And I'm surprised that you come up with anything because we left it over to you.
Well, I quite like the one that I think it was Dan said something.
Oh, yeah. That one we started. Should we go with that one this week?
Should we go with that one this week?
Yeah, let's do that one. Yeah.
Yes, our lovely sponsors, Comic House. They also have been putting out their own anthology for quite some time.
You're both in it, aren't you?
Yeah, and they are offering up issues 1 to 10 of the Comic House anthology. Like almost a complete set. I think there's 11. Is there 11? I think there's 11.
Yeah.
So loads of comics could be yours. We'll probably limit this to UK listeners because of the shipping.
Oh.
It's like a fucking house brick. It's massive. comics. Yeah, it's huge. Yeah.
Of course it is. They're quite thick, each of them, aren't
they? Yeah.
There's loads of comics here from fantastic indie creators. And we have an entire set, issues 1 to 10, to offer to our lovely listeners and beyond. There is 5 sets to offer up. Now, do we want to offer them all now or do a new competition next week? How should we do it? Live on air.
Let's do one a week. I like that.
One a week. Yeah,
let's do another competition next week and we can come up with an equally stupid idea then.
God, this could be the longest 5 weeks of my life. So, obviously, our lovely listeners...
Reminds me of the awesome games.
God.
Man, that went on.
Oh, yeah. That went on. yes, in order to win all of these issues, basically, what have they got to do, Dan?
Well, if you're a creator of a comic, you've got to give us the elevator pitch. If you're not a creator of a comic, you've got to come up with an elevator pitch for a comic off the top of your head. And then the best elevator pitch...
Yeah, it's got to be original.
Original. Yeah. The one you'd write it like you'd want someone to read and think, fuck, yes, I'm picking up that comic.
Yeah. What we'll probably do, we'll get together with Pete from Comic House to actually put votes on the best pitch. Do you reckon that's the best way to do it?
I think so.
Yeah.
He can decide, can't he? How about that?
Yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah.
So there's several different ways you can do it. You can email us your pitch, awesomecomicspod@gmail.com, and we'll probably also put something up on the group, on the Facebook group, Awesome Comics Talk. But God knows what we're going to get.
That's a good idea.
But yes, so there's the competition. Yeah. We haven't done a competition in quite some time.
No.
I thought it'd also be good for people to kind of get their elevator pitch up to scratch.
Yes, yeah. Because essentially, For those maybe who are just joining us, because we've had some new listeners recently, so well, thank you and welcome. For those, when we say elevator pitch, what do we mean?
So here's an example for Purgatoria. Do you like red boobs? Then you'll like this.
Yeah. Essentially, it's like you get into a lift with someone and you've got a number of floors to tell them that all about your comic, say like 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And it's like back of the video box, back of the DVD case, blurb about your comic to sell it.
It's not like
front page of a pitch that you hand over to a publisher that's got a brief summary, so they don't have to trawl through pages of text.
Yeah. And it's not a big like synopsis or something like you see on the back of a book necessarily. It's short, sharp, and to the point. So there you go. Send us your elevator pitches. You son of a pitches.
Is that what we're going to call it, son of pitches?
So, yes. Why not? Why not? Yeah, the rest of the show is going downhill, so we might as well make it all that. So get in touch, and you could win all of those fantastic comics.
Exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting.
I might do it myself. We're exempt, aren't we? We're not allowed to do it.
We can't do it. And anyway, I think you've just done yours anyway, Tony.
Yeah. Brian Osmond might write in.
Why Brian?
I don't know.
You should have said Tina.
Tina Osmond. You'd definitely go out with a Tina Osmond.
I'm not going to say anything just in case there's anyone called Tina Osmond listening.
Yeah. And if you are, please go out with Vince on a date.
For anyone who's wonders, I am taken.
Second base guaranteed.
Tony keeps trying to sell me like an old tin of spam.
Yeah, but I know that Joe will take her revenge because she is my mortal enemy.
Oh dear! Just wait until I manage to get her on this show. That'd be fun.
Oh, I'd love that. I'd love to. I'd get her to mute you. Me and her just have a proper conversation. You handed her the phone the other day. You handed me the phone. So you were chatting to her.
And then can I be honest with you? It freaked her the fuck out.
Really?
Because I started saying, look, I did my funny thing where I ignored what she was saying and said, look, if you have got any more relationship advice, then please come back to me. And you said, give me the phone.
Oh, dear. That's... Anyway, that's what you get when you know an Esmond or an Osmond.
Or Brian Osmond.
Yeah.
And his sexy sister, Tina.
So that sort of nonsense was exactly the sort of stuff that happened while we're at MCM.
Because I wasn't with you.
Yeah, Tony was on the table.
We saw you briefly. Now, obviously, last week we had a bit of an interview show, and my croaky Barry White-like voice in between. but I guess here and now this week we're going to talk about our experience at MCM. Obviously, it's a huge show. It's one of, I think, the May show is one of the biggest ones of the year, isn't it?
It's one of the biggest ones in the world.
Is it really?
It's like fourth or fifth biggest in the world, isn't it?
Wow, okay.
Blimey. And I know the October MCM is also growing or doing really well. But we just wanted to talk about our experience, the good, bad, and the ugly, and everything in between. We've got two sort of ways to talk about it. Because, Tony said, he wasn't with us because he was manning the no-brow table.
Yeah.
Tony was in the dealers section and we were kind of in the comic village.
Yeah.
Yeah, the ghetto.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The hood. And before we get properly stuck in with it, we just have to say congrats to Tony. Obviously, we knew about it anyway, but you announced this week your No Brow news, didn't you? Do you want to tell listeners about
that? Yeah, so I'm now employed full time by No Brow, which is very exciting. You guys did know about it, but we were sort of waiting until I got. Until I got a sort of proper,
you got deloused
to say that.
Yeah.
Until I was allowed to say it, basically.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, everyone was really, really nice about it, and I've got a little desk now, and all that sort of thing, and it was very good, fun. I'm really enjoying it there. Genuinely, really nice people to work with. Really, really nice environment in the office. So I'm now in place as the events and sales rep, which sounds very prestigious.
Yeah. That company's played a blinder.
Thank you, mate. It's very kind of say so. Yeah, by keeping me away for so long.
Finally submitting.
It's me scratching at the door.
But, Yeah, you've got a good eye for stuff, and I think you do. Yeah, do well for them.
It's been funny actually, because loads of people have said, you know, well done, and it's been really nice. There's a couple of people who come out of the woodwork, and you know what I'm saying around that, don't you?
Yeah.
You know, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah,
but yeah, good.
I heard about your lottery win. We haven't spoken in 20, 30 years.
Yeah, Adrian. Exactly.
Yeah. Did he win the lottery?
Yeah.
Oh, Tony, we need to talk off air.
Three people won it. Me, Tina Osmond, and Brian Osmond.
I was going to say, before we kind of get too much into the MCM chat, before we went in there, we kind of decided that this one was going to be primarily about like making sales. We wanted to sell the awesome comic.
Yeah.
And just that's the primary focus. And when we went into the weekend, yeah, that's what we was looking at. So we did a lot of kind of research, talking to people, had guests on the show, as you well know if you're a listener, and tried to sort of get up on it before we hit the...
We've really focused, didn't we? We've really drilled down into the detail of it, and this is our fourth show about it now, really.
Yeah.
It was obviously... Dan had been there with Raynard City before, hadn't you?
The ones I went to were a very different show to this one.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I mean, this one felt like it was a very corporate, well-run, very smooth.
Yeah.
Like before, you just kind of like lumbered in. Like there was no carpet on the floors. It was just bare floor. And it was just a bit more kind of rough and ready.
I think I'd have preferred bare floors because those carpets were so bright. I think they burnt my retina a little bit.
And what colour carpet were you on, Tony?
I think we were the orange carpet.
We were on the green comic.
I didn't realise that was they were comic colour coded for what.
Yeah, and the pink was between us, and that was like really bright. Like Jesus.
Yeah. So obviously MCM is a huge show. It took place between the 24th and 26th of May, and the Excel Centre, wasn't it? Yeah. Is that
right?
Yeah. So there was set up on the 23rd, which we'll talk about in a minute as well.
Yeah.
Me and Vince went there on the Friday morning, and there was about a half hour journey on the Uber from Victoria.
Yeah.
And I've got to take my hat off to the driver because he spent the entirety of the time, quite industriously picking his nose.
Well, it's like knowing London cab drivers, it stops him just being blatantly racist during the journey, doesn't it? You know what I mean?
I did speak to him, like said about like, traffic this time of day, blah blah blah, and he sort of gave me a kind of like an answer. It's like, fine, if we're going to do the no talking, that suits me fine.
Yeah, I prefer that.
Bollocks.
Yeah. So instead,
you're in a black cab and he says things like, "I don't like foreigners," do you? And you have to sort of lean forward in the seat. Say, "What was that, mate? I can't hear you." And then every time he says something, you have to lean. That really irritates me.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Okay, I won't get too much of the black cab drivers, but when they get out of the fucking Fiddle and saying, "Oh, woe is me," I thought, I'll give it a rest.
Yeah.
You do all right. Don't worry about that.
In and out driveway in Basildon, we know you have.
Yeah.
Oh,
anyway.
Where were we?
We're just returning from like really crap social satire.
Yeah. So we were fully prepared. This is obviously the first time I'd ever been to
you'd not even stepped into one, had you?
No, the closest I had been to a sort of show like this is when we did the London Super Comic Con at the XL 3 years ago. Was that 3 years ago?
I think that was comparable.
Yeah.
Like,
But that was very different in the sense of that was just one room, wasn't it? Whereas this, the XL sort of was taken over.
Both sides of the corridor, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was taken over. Yeah. Now there was a north side and a south side. Don't know about you guys, I did not step foot in the south side where you have all the movies, the games and all those sort of
things. Apart from one visit to you for literally 5 minutes and the bit where me and you, Vince, went around seeing if we could steal something early on, that's the only time I stepped more than 6 feet away from the table.
Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't go very far.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I only made it down to you once.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I suppose we should, I guess, go... From the very beginning, I guess.
Yeah, so you do your side, and then I'll mention what happened on our side. Sort of
right, thing. So the adventure began for me at 2:30 in the morning.
Oh, fucking hell, you set off like super early, didn't you, on the Mega?
No, I wasn't on the Mega, I was on the National. Sat next to the bogs, living the real life.
Just in case.
Yeah, you never know. Just in case you get a nervous belly.
That's 2:30 a.m. He was on the fucking bus.
Yeah. The bus was at like 4 o'clock. So which they got me into London at 7. That's, I'm not going to bore you with a travel story. That's as far as it goes. Because then Dan Butcher met me in Victoria.
Yeah. I have brought with me every single copy of the awesome comic I own.
Yeah.
And so did you, I think.
I had a suitcase so heavy. I had a suitcase so heavy it was probably like I was transporting a dead body. So we got a coffee. God, did we need a coffee, didn't we?
We got a coffee and I was like, let's get the Uber.
Did you get a coffee or?
Yeah, we had a lovely coffee, Tony.
We got a coffee and a pastry. I said, let's order the Uber. And then it said I was going to be here in 3 minutes' time. So we kind of, wolfed down this fucking pastry.
You're like a right pair of hobos. Yeah.
Standing on the side of the street.
So we got to the venue, lined up. It was pretty straightforward, wasn't it? This is all of that we're going to talk about now is our experience, whether it be us or Tony at Nobrow.
Mine was a nightmare.
I can't really fault MCM too much about whatever. The biggest complaint I can have is about having a bit more room behind the tables in the Comic Village. Yeah. But at the end of the day, I've been to plenty of cons where I've had similar experiences. Yeah. You never seem to have enough table room behind your table.
Yeah.
But, should we do my Thursday then? Because
let's start with that.
So me and Sam drove down with a car full of stuff and got there, parked in the Joe Public car park because you can get into the lift from there. You know what, you were with us, Vince, weren't you?
Yeah.
Just underneath the hall later on the week. And went upstairs on the Thursday. So you can start as of 12. So we got there like spot on 12, queued up to this desk. And as you said, have you filled your paperwork in? And we said, yeah, we've sent it to you. We've emailed it to you like you requested. And she said, no, you got to fill it out. Which is good. So that's a waste of my time fucking emailing the paperwork in. Do you know what I mean? And also, and then we filled that out, gave it back to her. And we asked her where the table was, and she said, well, if you don't know, I don't know. And then just started talking to the next person. So that was good.
Fucking hell.
And then we tried to get in the hall, and they said, you need a high-vis jacket. So we said, oh, okay. So we went and bought a high-vis jacket. And that was £5 each for a high-vis vest. So we put them on. And then we went in, and we said to this woman, we had to go and sign in, said to this woman, can we have a trolley? And she said, yeah, see the man outside. And as we walked up to these trolleys, I was pointing at one, and the bloke, without even asking, says, no, mate, we're not insured to give you these trolleys. I said, okay, right, okay. So being nice, Sam's a nice guy, I'm nice, trying to be a nice guy. And we said, oh, how about, could we pay you to, help us with our stuff? He says, yep, that's £50 a day. I went, right, okay. So I then threw a spanner in works and said, oh, mate, you want to be careful, because the woman in the office is telling everyone that you're helping out. Oh, I'm not having that, which he hadn't really, to be fair. And just to wind him up. So he stormed in there and had an argument with this woman, which cheered me up. So I ruined his day for him ruining my day. And then we did 5 trips in the lift up to the floor with boxes, which was a nightmare. And then we set our thing up. So they're quite, I don't know what they're like in Comic Village, but they're like only so many tables, only so many chairs. And one of our chairs was broken and we tried to swap it and there was none to swap and all that sort of thing. We had all that nonsense. And then somebody came around and handed us a bit of paper that said you can't stick things to the booth, and you can, and they had a long list, no blue tack, no, you know, it's like that, no sellotape, you know, sort of. And then we said, okay, thank you. And then we put all our stuff up, and then we thought, well, there's still loads of people moving in, so we had to sort of cover that up. It was a right pain in the ass to get in. Just real dramas. People were like, I think the thing is, the MCM staff is, they make so much money that they don't care to whether they need to help you or not.
Yeah.
Or if they it fuck off one exhibitor, it doesn't really matter because they
don't. Somebody fill that space.
That's kind of in that comic creators group, they did mention about the high vis jackets, you need them. But that was people on site telling you that.
Yeah.
It wasn't like they'd given pre warning. I'm not sure if they did or not.
For anyone who tries to get in on the Thursday is essentially a building site. It's classified almost under the same sort of regulations because there's like forklifts and, you know, cranes and all that sort of cherry pickers and all that thing. So you have to wear some kind of high-vis jacket. Do you know what I mean?
That's fair enough. I mean, they should give people a heads up. I mean, they're building those fucking stages and everything, and there's a lot going on. You don't want a forklift going through your head, your favourite head.
Yeah, I think so. That's fine by me. That and they were a fiver, but whatever. Do you know what I mean? That's only a fiver.
Yeah.
So that's pretty good. So that was my setup day.
Yeah. Whereas we turned up on the Friday morning, so obviously that's when I guess the majority of Comics Village were turning up on the Friday morning, I guess.
Yeah.
So, I think it's about 50-50.
Yeah.
There was quite a few people already set up.
Yeah, there's quite a few people already set up. But we got in.
People from Comic Village use it as a sort of networking thing. I saw a couple of, they shall remain nameless, people who are always sniffing around publishers and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Well, at least one of those persons has sent me an email since I declared my involvement with Nobrow, to be fair, in the last 2 days.
Interesting. We had a couple of salespeople coming around.
We'll talk
about that a bit later.
Yeah. And so a couple of Comics Village came in because it's a good, I think they see it as a good networking opportunity.
Yeah.
Because the actual bigger publishers and the sort of companies are setting up, and they get a chance to, like we did with when we set up at London Super Comic Con, and we got to chat to Mike Zeck and all these people. There's no crowd sort of thing.
Our set was pretty simple. We found our pitch quite quickly, didn't we, Dan?
But yeah, no problem at all.
But like Dan mentioned before, that there wasn't a great deal of space between tables. We're talking like you're back to back with banners and stuff.
There were massive aisles in the Comic Village, and at no point of people. Like, you could have moved in like a couple of foot each side, and I know all the tables would have done that, and you wouldn't really have lost much. I presume that it was just the same space carpet that they had in each section.
Yeah.
So that defined how big the aisle was going to be.
Yeah. And I know, for instance, some people were quite irate about that sort of space. And for instance, health and safety, if things go wrong, then, people who just wanted to go to the loo, for instance, it would be a bit of a nightmare. And apologies to like Mike Lee Graham and like Martin Simmons and like all the people I had to say sorry as I was walking. Yeah. Every time you walk away from your table, you've got to constantly apologize to people.
Do you crop dust them because you've been waiting a while?
No. I do that with the general public.
save that for outside.
Yeah. Yeah, so there was that, but in terms of like setting up the table, it was very straightforward, wasn't it, Dan? I think.
Yeah, it's really easy. No problem at all.
And before we knew it, it was almost. We popped over to see Tony on the Friday, didn't we?
Yeah.
And immediately he gave us grief for not getting him a tea. Every time.
Standard. Well, we do not get him one, so I feel like that's deserved.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost a tradition now.
Yeah. We were tabling next to Emily Owen, Gav Mitchell on our right, and with Gary Erskine on our left.
Yeah.
And they were absolutely great company throughout the entire weekend.
Yeah. We were very lucky with the sort of the people around us, like great creators, like, on the tables behind as well. So it was a good group of people that sort of it made it an enjoyable weekend, in those downtime, should we say.
Yeah. Because on the Friday, basically, it started off and it was relatively quiet.
Yeah.
And even calling back to the Milmo show when she said, like, everyone panics on the Friday. Mm. I think you said that to me, Vince, because I was like, Friday, kind of later in the afternoon, I was like, fucking hell, this is tragic. Yeah. Like, we're not getting anything here.
Found Friday, especially the first couple of hours, people were just doing loops.
Yeah.
Seeing what there was about,
Yeah.
People were just like walking straight through like our row, not stopping. That was kind of pretty much our Friday, wasn't it, Vince?
Yeah, pretty much. Wasn't great sales wise at all. We had a couple of moments though, away from the comics, but in terms of like us actually doing drawing,
that was good.
What me and Dan found was we used the downtime, like Dan was sitting there drawing and people would see it and then ask for commissions and stuff like that, so that was a real positive takeaway from the whole thing,
because essentially whenever Vince said, what should we draw, and someone said, draw Robocop, draw this, and then someone walked past it, oh, I wanted that.
Yeah.
And then they bought him, like Vince had drawn a Robocop and someone came and said, oh, I wanted a Robocop. And Vince like, well, I just drawn this. And I want a battle damage one. And so Vince had to get cracking again.
I think that's good, though, because I think you were like not lacking confidence. You were just thinking, how am I going to get this done, Dan, Vince, weren't you? You were thinking, and since then, you've been a machine since then.
Yeah. I think there's that one positive takeaway you can take from it is that work ethic.
I think I've said it on the show as well. I didn't really have confidence to do drawing on the day of a convention.
Yeah.
I never really have, and full props to anyone that does it. Like, all the time. And I love watching the stuff. But I guess I just don't have necessary confidence in my own work. But we thought we'd take a chance on it, me and Dan, sort of drawing. And I'm not saying I was busy all the time, but I got a couple of commissions which really sort of, and they were fun to do. Especially someone came up and just asked for two. And two characters from Twin Peaks, which I hadn't
seen. Oh yeah, I like them, yeah.
Yeah.
You didn't stumble or wobble through any of those drawings. It was really assured. You did it. Do you know what I mean? There wasn't kind of, oh, fucking hell, am I going to do this? Or you draw it five times, rubbing it out and starting again.
Yeah.
It was that you just tackled it and did it.
Which is strange, because sometimes when I'm at home working on these pieces, one-off pieces, I will do that. There's one bit that isn't quite right. It was strange. I think when you're putting that sort of, you're doing it for someone else, it's almost like your mind focuses a little bit.
I think that's good. Really good.
It's the equivalent of not knowing a song and then going on stage and knowing all the words to it. It's a similar sort of thing, isn't it? Because you get carried away in the moment. And then the confidence almost of just being there, doing it, and everyone's doing it. And I have to say, though, the other takeaway from this is that Dan should be drawing Captain Britain professionally.
Oh, my.
Because I posted pictures. He did me a Captain Britain old and new sort of head sketch.
Yeah.
And it got so many likes, because I think I put, this man should be drawing Captain Britain professionally. And he got so many fucking likes, dude.
Oh, cheers.
Yeah.
As you know, I'd love to do Captain Britain.
Yeah, you'd kill on that, yeah.
And Danny Dyer as the facial reference when he's the Union Jack.
We had some nice sort of artistic moments like that. I think, for instance, Dan was, even though he gave me Robocop, he'd asked me what should I draw, and I said, well, I don't know, Jason Voorhees from Friday the 13th. So he did this awesome Jason Voorhees A5 and just stuck it up on the board, and someone came by and then bought it. I want that. And that, and then that same person came round with their friend. Was it the next day or was it later in the day?
Later in the day.
And then her friend wanted a commission from Dan. So.
Oh, no, where's this going?
Oh, that was the event? That was Hawkeye, wasn't
it? That was Hawkeye.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, from an artistic standpoint, it was a very confidence-boosting. It was a lot of fun. I think that we did have a lot of fun. On one day, everyone around us. Gav Mitchell also, he says he rarely draws at the table. Don't know why, because he absolutely smashes it whenever he touches pen to paper. He saw us drawing, and he just wanted to do some drawing as well. So we had a day where, I think on the Friday, everyone was drawing John Wick, weren't they? Or was that Saturday?
I think it's Saturday. And Martin Simmons as well. He'd done an absolutely amazing one.
He did a great one, didn't he? Yeah. I saw that. Yeah, Martin came over for a long chat, actually. It was good to see him. Yeah.
It's concerning when, an artist of that caliber, with all these work there, and he's not getting the people coming up to the table. Friday was a wobble, because to be fair, on every other con, if we're busy or not, I'm just having a ball, really enjoying it and having a fun time. But where I'd sort of hung my hat on, or hung our collective hat on, we're going to be selling, and everyone said, oh, you fucking sell out at MCM.
Yeah,
I was like, right, this is our objective, and it didn't.
Yeah. We had certain numbers, not massive numbers, but we were right, we want to sell this per day, ideally, not looking to sell out of anything, but certainly shift some units.
We didn't want to fucking carry it all home.
Yeah. we didn't come anywhere near meeting those targets.
No.
on any of the days. But Friday itself, very, very quiet for us. Had a bit of a, Dan had a bit of a wobble. I was just, because I've been up so long, because it's a 9 till 7 day as well. That's what you need to be prepared for if you're going to do this event.
But they're long days, aren't they? I mean, they let us in early on the Friday, and I was in for, I think, 7:15. And what time did we leave on the Friday, Vince? About 7:30?
Yeah.
Long day. On your feet is a long day as well. Do you know what I mean? Your plates of meat really kicking, aren't they? Up.
Yeah. And I was just fueled by sugar, caffeine, and just the excitement of being at the event. So, I had my pom-poms and was being a cheerleader and just sort of saying, now we'll smash it tomorrow.
I mean, we were going a bit light on coffees in the last couple of days, because when you're doing £7 for two coffees and you're not making
and it
money.
It takes you so long. It takes you 3 quarters of an hour. Sam had his son there, who's, I think, 11 or 12, and we were sending him off for coffees, and he was gone for ages. I felt really bad. It's and the queues were so long. And I tried to get a cup of coffee or a cup of tea and something. Who was with me? Was it you, Vince, or Dan? I can't remember. Tried to get a drink out of the one of the stalls inside, and they said, "Oh, we're not allowed to serve you till 9.
Yeah, it was the Dunkin' Donuts one.
That's it.
Friday morning, wasn't it? Yeah,
that's right. Yeah.
But on the No Brow, how was the first proper day of trading then, Tony, for No Brow?
So we found pretty much every day was the same, to be fair, business wise.
Mm-hmm.
From a sort of every day was also a couple of hours of sort of people would sweep round. They could say hello, have a chat, and say, "Oh, I'll be buying something later. I'll be back." And a lot of the time, they weren't lying. They were being completely truthful.
Yeah.
You know, they did come back and buy something. It was, I'm going to say, 50% cosplayers, as the convention goes. Probably there was the percentage of cosplayers there was very high, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It's
a cosplay show. It's very much a cosplay show.
Yeah, it is. And some of the people I probably didn't think were cosplayers probably were. I just would sort of low key sort of costumes or something. But the we were finding that this was a constant throughout it that. Previously, when I've done No Brow tables, people come up, they know the product, they want it, and they buy it. You know, so the way it works. So they come over and they go, "Oh, you got the Hilda books in, or you got Kingdom by John McNaught, or something like that, or Skip, or you know, in waves. Oh, I'm waiting for this." But this one, they come over and go, "What do you do then?" And I say, "Well, what are you into? These are the sort of books we do." So every sale was quite often a long conversation.
Yeah.
So the most common thing I heard all week was, I love Hilda. And we go, "All right, have you read the comics? There's a comic." You know, that was the most common. Then you just explain to them what came first and stuff like that. So everything was like, it was because of that, it was very tiring. So I'm going to say from about 12 noon onwards, we were doing that pretty much constantly. There was always two, possibly three people at the table. And it was, and we found that the custom came in waves. So you get people over chatting, buying, leaving, and then you get like 10 minutes of nothing. And we go, "This is weird, it's gone quiet again." Then you get four people at the table again. You know, it's like that. And the thing is, because we had such a long table, it was difficult to have one person doing it. So we always had to have two. We had the adult books on one end and the children's books at the other. So you sort of swapped. If you were tired of saying, "Oh, you'd never heard of Hilda as a comic first, then you've seen it on Netflix," which is something I think I said about 4,000 times over the weekend. You'd switch around to going, "Oh, what sort of, you know, are you into sort of, you know, sci-fi or, you know," it's like that. So it was hard graft selling, you know. And I don't know what you, I'm not from a sales background, and I'm sort of slightly self-conscious if I'm with someone I don't know, because you almost feel like it's a test, you know, when I'm working this company. Yeah. So I was sort of, and as you've heard from me before, I despise people who put books in people's hands. You know, and I'm a big one to say, "Look, it's not a hard sell, but I'll tell you what, you will love this book." You know, it's like that. Have a look, you know, have a browse. Tell me what you think. You've got any questions? And the thing is, a lot of people were asking questions, saying, "Oh, where's this from? And who's this?" And all this sort of thing, you know. And I would say probably 2/3 of the people we engaged in conversation bought something.
Well, that's good.
It's just pretty good. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of screeching cosplayers and a lot of sort of screaming and stuff like that. And some people who possibly weren't quite all there occasionally.
Yeah.
You know, sort of running around and screaming and stuff. But it was a whirlwind. But it's the little 10-minute breaks between that I was really feeling it, because I didn't sit down all day, you know, sort of all day. I literally was eating a bite of a sandwich and engaging with someone. Then 15 minutes later, it's taking the second bite. It was kind of like that, really. But I think that's partly down to where we were. So we were behind the marvelous Funko stage or Funko booth. We were opposite the cash points, which is quite a good place to be. And we were opposite, and at sort of 1 o'clock was a stall that sells mystery boxes.
Yeah.
Which Samsung bought one, and it was you got an Avatar mug and a set of pencils from the X-Files.
Okay, fucking hell. I mean, those mystery boxes and the Funko Pops were doing big business, because I saw people walking around. Some of the size of the Funko Pops, like, it was like ridiculous. A giant one. I'm not sure if it was like a Thanos one, but it was like a massive shopping bag.
Yeah.
With just that in it. And,
that surprised me about that is, because when me and Tony went in early on the Sunday, was it, Tony? I think we went.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
And we had a wander around. And finally, because I just saw this huge Funko sort of booth, I thought, "Oh, let's see what it actually is." It's a fucking shop.
Yeah, it's like they built an entire big shop.
Yeah.
It was
hugely impressive. It was, you know, if you're a Funko fan, that's where you want to go. And they'd even figured out the queue, so you know it was a one-way traffic to go into the shop.
It sort of snaked backwards and forwards around a rope, like you get at the airport trying to get through customs. It was a bit of that. To be fair, the guys from the mystery boxes all bought books off us. And they bought the more sort of stuff like In Waves and Kingdom and Skip, and you know the more sort of arty stuff that we had. And they were, I think they were, you know, they were genuinely sort of nice guys. They weren't sort of meathead people, just like, you know, Cockneys or Scousers, just sell. They were actually like nice guys. You know, in fact, they helped us unload at the end of the day, sort of thing. So,
oh, nice one.
Yeah, they were right. So saying that we made friends with them, I couldn't tell you who was behind us. I couldn't tell you who was to the left of us, and didn't even look at their stall. I didn't get a chance, you know. So it was a bit, it was a kind of constant. You say, what was it like on the Friday? But it was kind of constant. It was like quiet-ish to start with, apart from Sunday, where we got a big rush on in the last sort of couple of hours.
Yeah.
But people say that, don't they? People say Sunday's the buying day for these 3 days.
Yeah. So we had their Friday, where we all, and there was no sort of like, oh, it's a 3-day convention, you're going to be social all the time. No. We finished on the Friday, and it was a case of get home, get some rest.
We were done, weren't we?
Yeah.
We were proper
Get ready for the Saturday.
Yeah. Yeah.
Vince staying over mine. And I have to say, on the Saturday, because we were a bit late, we'll talk about that in a minute, but we were a bit late. I have to say, if I hadn't had you sitting next to me, I'd have fallen asleep on the M11. God tell you.
Bloody hell.
Yeah, it was hard graft getting back. Yeah.
I did not know my life was in your hands.
On the Saturday, we had to nip into my office to get like the new table banner we ordered because we got fucked around by the printers,
which looks great. So,
it looks all right, doesn't it? Yeah,
yeah.
I came in a bit late, so I had to go in with the great unwashed.
It's such a deeper.
Yeah. To be fair, like it's kind of going in, and I've got like the stormtroopers, like they're being in character, telling me to move along, and I had to bite my lip because like I was really hot, uncomfortable. Just been on the fucking underground, and there's like my temper was frayed a little, and I'd stop myself and say, mate, just fuck off. I just ain't got the time for it. But I was like, there's loads of kids around this ain't the environment for it, so I just went on through.
But you never know. And we had a little bit, big thanks to Emily Owen, who helped us sort of rejig the table, you know, to get sort of maximum. We got some learnings as well. I think I definitely learned something about how to present like the awesome comics book on a table as well.
Yeah.
Things that we hadn't necessarily thought of. Because when you design your own table, you are kind of like in a bubble. Mm. And all it takes is someone to just sort of say, oh, that would pop better if it was like this. And we're like, oh my God, of course.
Of course, so,
We learned the lessons of the weekend. So we learned what people were looking at. And we changed Saturday and we changed Sunday morning. We rearranged it. And I've got to tell you, books standing up, more visible, are much better at MCM because it's not like a where everyone looks at every table.
Yeah,
they're like magpies. If it shines a bit, they run over to it.
Interesting.
Because like you're competing with so much branding.
Yeah, and it's an overload for your eyeballs, isn't it? That convention. So you've got to have something that people go, oh, and they run over. That's what we had. So when we had the Hilda dolls piled high, people could see them from the entrance, and they'd come legging it over, you know, and stuff like that as well. Nice.
So we went in on the Saturday. On the Saturday, obviously, we were prepping, thinking this is going to be the big one. This is obviously the number. This is the numbers game in terms of like how many people are going to be there. And I will say it was packed. It got to a certain point, and you would look out onto the sort of middle corridor where all the cafes and coffee shops were.
Like the concourse.
You would just think, I'm not going out there.
I've got to tell you, I legged it for a wee at one point, my urine was quite dark because I was too hydrated. But I've got to tell you, thank God I'm not a woman. You know, I know there's a lot of people who are thinking that themselves, but thank God because it's easy for a bloke. There were people peeing in the basins in the toilet when
I
went.
Really? Bloody hell.
But the women's queue was all the way round the back of the sort of the basement bit.
Oh, God.
I just use those ones at the back of the hall and like just no problem whatsoever going into them.
Yeah. I never got to them. I think it was a bit far for me, but...
Yeah. And when you went to those ones, you went up the stairs and you saw a view over the whole floor.
Oh, that's where you took that picture from. I wonder where that came from.
When you see the picture, which I'll probably post when we post this episode, it's packed. There's just people everywhere. But that doesn't for us. That didn't
translate.
That didn't translate to comic.
No
comic. Village.
I mean, we had I would say we had our usual conversion rate of when someone comes to the table with an interest and we talk about the comic, we pitch it to them.
Yeah, but 85% so, we
yeah, our usual yeah. kind of like they get interested and they buy the comic, which is kind of it. Yeah. But we didn't have them coming over, and it wasn't just us. It was like yeah. a lot of people.
Yeah.
Hell of a lot of people. I could look over the row opposite us and there was a chap with a booth and he had like, I'll draw your Dungeons and Dragons character. And yeah. I said to Vince on Friday, this guy's going to go fucking, he's going to
have
And he had like all these little charts up where like he'd got like the characters pack out and like drawn all their equipment in like an isometric view. It was all really nice hand drawn stuff. And I thought he's really going to do well. I can't, because I've learned that Dungeons and Dragons is a big thing now and it completely passed me by. So I thought, yeah, he's going to go fucking mad. And he was just as bad as us.
Yeah. Now, I think it's important to say, I mean, from our perspective, the numbers were there. You would see it. There'd be people everywhere. I joked with some people, if you want a bit of a bit of fresh air and to stretch your legs, come to Comic Village at certain times, because
it was fucking desolate. We had like maybe like one or two people.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know whether it was us, Dan, but our sort of lane was one of the quieter ones, wasn't it?
Yeah. Because we were right by the doors, the big main doors, so people would come in and you could go straight through ours. But it was really bad. I mean,
But and this, I think it's important to say this. I can't. We were puzzled. At first, we were like, right, there's people everywhere.
Yeah.
But no one seems even interested. You know what I mean?
All the elements were there, but like, it's like we're not making the fucking cake.
Yeah.
We've got all the ingredients.
Yeah.
But it's not coming together. Yeah.
Part of me thought afterwards that the aisles were so wide that a lot of people were travelling down the middle of these aisles. You know, we've all done it. When you're at a convention,
to not get pulled in.
We talked about it a few weeks ago, didn't we?
Yeah. When you don't want to get pulled in, you stay down the middle, you keep your eyes forward. Just keep going. And
it's
we saw
like that time you and I went through Soho that night. Do you remember?
Oh yeah, I try not to think about that night. I still don't walk straight. Anyway,
this might be a bit of a controversial opinion. I know we've had back and forth on this a lot with us and listeners. Zero sales to cosplayers. We had no sales. Yeah.
Differences. I sold to cosplayers. I mean, but we were selling a lot, but we had a couple of Hilda cosplayers who were great. You know, great people. But the
feel like the kind of the independent stuff. For this time around, this didn't appeal to them.
We didn't sell to any furries. I'd like to point that out.
One bit of a feedback I got from speaking to a few people was someone who'd been there, tables who'd been there for like many years, and their kind of people knew them and came to the Comic Village to get them. They were doing all right. They were doing their usual trade. So there's, I'm not going to name names, but a couple of people who'd been there before did all right.
And
so
I think for this whole weekend as well. We're only speaking about like our experiences here, because there were certain times where I wanted to get interviews, and when I wandered round, the people I wanted to try and talk to were always busy. Sod's law, you know. I think Martin Simpson.
I'll be honest with you, though. Sorry to interrupt, mate. Go on. Sorry. Is it really our crowd? Is it really crowd who would like Cockney Kung Fu and you know? Yeah.
That's what I thought, like, because when we go to other shows, people know the kind of what we do and our brand. When this one, we was going in cold, like no one really knew us, but
you kind of like have to do that. I mean, even though we may have this podcast, we may have this comic, we have to treat every show like no one knows us. Like this is a comic, this is comic for you, isn't it? You know, rather, because if we're trying to sell within the people of this bubble that we've created, it will only go so far.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I was thinking beyond that, so I was thinking because our comics are a little bit.
Now,
grindhouse, a little bit indie, a little bit edgy. Is that what they're looking for? They,
we did discuss.
There's no unicorns in them. Put it up.
Yeah,
you know, put it that way.
We discussed that, and you know, we had those moments of maybe it's just not our crowd. But we saw a lot of titles that were we thought they're
very
gonna,
much the crowd.
They're going to sell out surely, and they were having similar experiences to us.
Yeah,
there was like for every like success story, saying we're doing all right. There was a few more kind of fucking hell. What's going on?
Yeah.
I don't want to kind of name names as in who was saying this, but there was a number of people saying we can't really work this out. Don't really know what's going on. And I'm still in that place of I don't know, because Everyone says every other show MCM they've been to has been absolutely amazing on sales, but this one was an anomaly.
Yeah.
The let me put this: if you had the Viper cosplay on, do you think that would have improved sales?
I don't know.
I just suddenly thought. Yeah.
He should have.
Obviously,
he would have died. You know,
I find it slightly arousing as well. Yeah, so it would improve my taste.
Yeah. but you know, it's the crowd didn't seem to be there to buy that kind of stuff. But the people that came up and we did have some people sort of saying, "Oh, what's this?" And they genuinely knew nothing about it. That was fantastic.
We had a few listeners come up actually.
Yeah, yes. I sent a few people your way as well, didn't I? With little messages for you.
Yeah, that was great. Yeah.
And one bloke came over with a little message, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. Thanks for that, Tony.
But I mean, we can kind of jump onto the Sunday. Our Sunday was essentially pretty much the same as the Saturday. We pretty much done exactly the same thing. I think commission wise, we did a little more on the Saturday.
Yeah. Saturday was the successful commission day, wasn't it? That was sort of a bit busier. And we had I put a box aside for like just art bits, just like some drawings I had left, you know, that I've had sitting around, or I did some ones recently, put them in this box. Dan had some drawings, we put them all together, and that something like that was a success because people would come and browse without feeling as if someone's there to try and sell them something. They could just browse.
Everyone wanted their niche, didn't they? I'm looking for Terminator, I'm looking for a horror icon, I'm looking for whatever it was.
And
they wanted that bit.
Yeah. I think the important thing to do is these shows, and I'm not talking about the actual organization, I'm talking about like the crowds at these shows, they don't owe anyone anything. And they're there for a day out. And if they want to spend all their money on Funkos or they want to spend their money on cosplay, you know, supplies and stuff like that.
They were spending money on Funkos. Funkos have like this sort of bag for life, which you can get about 10 Funkos in. Yeah. This looks like a small train carriage.
Yeah,
and people were carrying loads of those about. Storm.
Yeah,
I think there was like carrying. There might have been a massive Thanos figure, but like they were carrying these bags. Like, fucking hell, that's massive.
I mean, some people may be like, "Oh god, you know, people are just buying tat and stuff." If they want to buy it, they can fucking well buy it.
Yeah.
If I was going to this show,
if they got no class, bound to have no class.
Was going to this show as a visitor, I may be someone that's actually going to Comics Village and trying to discover some new books, but I'm going to come away with some tat. I'm just going to buy some stuff just for the hell of it, probably.
You could do with a new lunchbox, couldn't you?
Probably.
But kind of condensing the Friday and Saturday down, we sold more comics at Troubes than we did the entire weekend of MCM.
It
wasn't good for us. We came away with a loss, essentially.
So we sold better than Thought Bubble. I can say that.
Interesting.
What, at Nobrow?
Yeah.
Okay, nice one.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Yeah, because you were quite busy.
You also had an extra day, though, didn't you?
Thought Bubble was even just Saturday and Sunday, we outdid it easily.
Mm.
It's an interesting one for us, and it was we tried it because of Hilda, and I think that was the right thing to do, and I think we did okay. Actually, do you know what I mean? So, and the thing about us as well is. And this is something you guys got to remember as well, is we opened up people's eyes to our books. So the amount of people who didn't know that Hilda was a comic first, the amount of people who didn't know about our brand, the amount of people that have now, because that, don't forget XL, whilst it is the big national thing, it's based in East London. So we had a lot of East London people there.
Yeah.
And we're saying, have you heard of the East London Comic Art Festival, which is, we'll talk about in a minute, which is coming up this weekend.
Yeah.
So we gave away a lot of, and there were a lot of cartoonists who came down from Comic Village, because obviously, Nobrow is something of a draw to, you know, cartoon. You know, it's seen as something a company people would like to be published by. And, you know, there's a lot of people who didn't know about LCAF, and there's a lot of people who will be going there because of this convention, you know.
That's fantastic.
A lot of people will be buying online. A lot of people now know about us. You know, a lot of people just bought one book and bought mine. So I think you kind of got to remember that as well, because I gave away a lot of awesome comics podcasts. People would come to the table, and they weren't so much the Nobrow crowd. They were more the sort of small press self-published thing.
Yeah.
So I was sending them down to you and saying, oh, here's a postcard. Go and find these guys. You know, so there are people who will be listening to this today who will have, will be their first one. Do you know what I mean? So
We must stress that everyone that we interacted with that came to our table was awesome.
Diamonds, yeah, lovely.
Absolutely awesome.
We really fucked up on a sale trying to get the PayPal machine to work.
Oh.
I've got the name. It was Alan and Sarah.
Yeah, Yeah.
Essentially, we tried to connect to the PayPal machine and it wasn't having it. I tried to find it and it was about 150 devices. Yeah,
we weren't using the Wi-Fi of the XL because we didn't want to remortgage our houses. So we were doing our 4G. Now, around the time, and I saw this with other sellers as well, around the time about lunchtime to 3 o'clock, the Wi-Fi was just dying. It was taking forever.
Yeah.
When you had card machines, that was a real knock-on effect.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, we still sold a pack. And I also, we were selling packs as well. We didn't really sell single issues. So every time we made a sale, we were selling four comics. So, you know, I'm now, I will say, after the weekend, you know, you're tired and you just think, oh, well, that sales-wise, that wasn't as good as it, you know, I was hoping it would be, blah, blah, blah. Now I'm thinking, well, we sold packs of comics. We gave cards to people that didn't know about the show.
Exactly, yeah. Man. And that's we've never run to a profit on this podcast. Yeah. The amount of trips we go on and like meetups we have, and you know, we rarely run to a profit. Yeah. You know, all we do is we'll sell a load of comics and then we'll go out for a fucking drink afterwards and spend all our money and more.
Yeah,
you know. Yeah. So you know, it's about the crack for us.
And it's about being realistic. I understand if people, some people have certainly invested a lot in travel and hotels and things like that. Thankfully, we didn't have these sort of expenses in a certain way. You know, thankfully, you know, I was staying at Tony's. He very kindly put me up, and Dan, you were going home every night and stuff like that. But you know, if you were staying at hotels and you had the travel and you had all of that, then the stress might have been a bit too much, and you may have come away from it being.
I've got to tell you, I can't see anyone in, no matter how many you sold in Comics Village, paying for hotels, travel, and all the rest. You'd be doing it. What's a hotel? What's that, 250 quid for the three or four nights at least?
Yeah.
You got like parking was 20 quid a day.
Yeah.
You know, you add on lunch and dinners, transport, and stuff like that. You know, petrol. Yeah.
So from our, you know, from everything we heard, I think we almost crushed ourselves under the weight of our own expectations.
I think there's
it's like going, to see a movie and your expectations are high. It's never going to meet them, is it? If you go into a movie and your expectations are low, and you can think, that's all right.
Yeah. To be on Monday, Tuesday, I was on the back foot from it all.
Yeah.
I was a bit kind of like, oh, fucking hell. Like, it's because I was tired as well. And when I'm tired, I'm fucking a bit of a shit. Yeah. And I was sort of thinking, I fucking banged out this comic and no one's fucking bought the bloody thing.
Yeah.
Which is not true, because people have bought it and people have enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It's just like when you kind of like focus it down on this weekend and this single event, and it's essentially you standing there and people not wanting it, but it's not a person at the time. I was like, oh, fuck's sake, why people are not buying this? But it's not a personal thing, because they don't know you, they don't know the comic, and it's not anywhere judgment.
And do you know what, as well, is it was, well, 3 or 4 days, and all we did was have a laugh between us and talked about comics. And I got to talk to strangers about comics. I got to talk to friends who were like, who've got some big breaking news coming about comics. I got to look at comics all day. Yeah. It was. How much better can it get than that? I actually found it genuinely quite inspiring, and you too clearly did, because all you did was draw your nuts off. You just drew nonstop, didn't you?
For those, you know, because I hadn't been before, and you know, you have the people that say, "Oh, yeah, it's good for sales," and you also have the people that sort of say, "Oh, it's just, you know, it's convention for tat, or you know, this, that, or the other. It's just pop culture." I'm sorry, if you go to this event,
just thinking out, you're fucked, aren't you?
You'll find something you want. If you want comics, there was a massive Comics Village there.
Quite a few back issues. We had a look through, didn't we, Sunday morning? Yeah. There was quite a few back issues.
There was back issues. There was, you know, there was T-shirts. There was everything. You know, if a show like this existed near me about like 10, 15 years ago, I would have been in hog heaven. So and on terms of in the day, but I didn't. There wasn't anything. Yes, there could have been more space behind the tables. That's it. I didn't have a problem. I didn't have a problem with anything else. I'm not saying. You can't say, oh, it wasn't signposted very well, because there was a huge banner for Comic Village. I had a problem with the font that they used, but that's by the by.
It was easy to find, I have to say. And I know we're taking the piss out of the carpet's burning your retinas out, I knew exactly where you are. I could see in the distance the colour of your carpet off in the distance. Yeah.
And I saw people wandering around. And if they're comic fans, if they're there to buy comics, people were walking around and buying comics, and they had bags, you know, because the see-through plastic bags that some people had, you could see the comics that they had bought, you know. So there's people there. I think just...
Yeah.
It wasn't our show, I think.
Yeah, I saw a couple of people who I recognised from the Comic Mart. So old school comic back issue comic collectors, I saw them wandering around. You know what I mean? So those people were there. okay, part the one side of the hall probably wouldn't have been any point going to. Yeah. You know, come to us, come to you, you know, come to the back issues. You know, Dead Universe were there. You know, they had a load of sort of 50p back issues and stuff like that. And Marvel had a table there.
Yeah.
You know, 2000 AD had a table.
Yeah.
You know, Turnaround, BHP, they had sort of quite a significant sort of, you know, tables there. We did, you know, we had six tables or not, you know, full of great comics.
Yeah. And, yeah, you, I guess, you know, you just got to temper your expectations. Obviously, go there to have a successful show. Who ever goes to a show and is not successful? If you go in with a glum face, don't bother going, if you ask me.
I've got to give a little shout out to Ayola and Sam and Benny, who were just great company. We just had a laugh all weekend. Genuinely funny all weekend. It was a real sort of siege mentality, because by the time we were sort of just looking pale faced and desperate on the Sunday night, thinking I just need to get home.
Yeah,
it was like, but it was still, no one at any point lost their sense of humour around my bit of it, and it was good. It was good company. Yeah. You know,
and it was exactly the same in Comics Village as well. I mean, we said we were lucky with the company we kept.
Definitely.
Because we were laughing pretty much most of the weekend, you know.
Yeah.
There were so many nerdy conversations going on. it was fantastic.
We went out for a meal on Saturday night as well with the Breakfast Boys. Chris Sides, Ken Reynolds, his lovely wife, and Jay...
Martin.
Yeah. Chris and Jenkins was there as well.
Chris Jenkins. And we quickly got round to our favourite subject matter, which is fecal matter. Yeah.
Everyone had to come up with the story, didn't they?
Yeah. I got dragged into it telling the poo knife story, and then it just went on from there.
Tell that story about your
the poo classic poo knife. As we round it off before we move on to the next subject... would Nobrow look into do this again?
Possibly.
And Vince, I'll ask the same question to you afterwards.
Yeah, possibly. I think we missed a trick. I think we should have been on some of the panels. I think some of the panels, God bless them, but there was a few of them, Tharg bless them, but there was a few of them that were quite low hanging fruit, and I can't imagine anyone would go to them. They just looked a bit dull. But we'd like to get in on a bit of the panel action, I think, in the future.
Yeah.
From Nobrow's point.
Yeah,
of view,
I certainly would go back, because no matter how well you do at a convention, learn from it. No convention is ever a true disaster. Even if your learning is, well, I'm not doing that one again.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Because you go into every show blind, and you could go into a show that, yeah, you've cleaned up every single year. That's not guaranteed that you're going to clean up again. Mm. And there's two MCMs a year as well, so everyone should.
Which must be out for soon, I presume. It must be coming out soon.
We're not going to be at the October one because we've got a couple of shows in October already.
Yeah, October's busy for us. Isn't it? Yeah.
Before the Mighty Thought Bubble in November. Big shout out to Chloe and Billy, who part of the Thought Bubble organisers, who came over to say hello. They were great. Hopefully we might be talking some more Thought Bubble goodness in the near future.
Yeah, I picked up some comics just chatting to people, because obviously, you know, Nobrow's quite a draw to illustrators and stuff. And if you go back through the reviews I've done this month, there's at least one there that was just a guy who came over from Iceland and started chatting to me about his comic. And I went, oh, bloody hell. And he said, here you go, have it. And then I did a review, and it's brilliant, really good.
Nice.
Yeah, we were there, you know.
You mentioned it earlier in the show, but we had a couple of printers and publishers come sniffing around the table, and I think they're very.
We had a digital printer, you know, these like digital.
They came around to us from you.
And he literally said, "We're like the Netflix for comics."
Yeah.
And I reached over and I punched him.
They had a comic which had sound effects in it, which wasn't too mad on, but essentially it was like an endless scroll comic, but elements within the panels would move as you move the screen up and down.
There's some very interesting things.
You know, that kind
on.
Of depth of field stuff.
Yeah, like that.
Yeah.
But they said that they would do it all, like you just submit the comic and they'd do that for you. And then there was another lady who was looking for more traditional print.
I wanted to say
this area is well mined, but
We might have some contacts that we'll be following up.
Yes.
In the future.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
See how this could go. So
I've got some news off a couple of people as well about future projects, and I'm like, wow, that sounds. You know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
And he told us something, and we're like, that is brilliant.
That's fucking ace.
Yeah.
Can't wait to see that. We'll have more news on that soon.
Yeah. So speaking of reviews.
Oh.
Moving on from our review of MCM.
So
did you have anything else to say?
Yeah. I'm all right.
I'm just gonna let him take over.
Tony, do you want to tell us about your 30-day review?
Thirty days of September, April, June, and November. But the so as you heard, I think I announced it at the 200th, didn't I? I think it's where I first started talking about it.
Yeah.
I did a bit of a sort of Jerry Maguire middle of the night diatribe rant on the blog about how I think that nobody's out there genuinely reviewing comics anymore. Everything is either just amazing or there's a few sites that just like give people terrible reviews in order to get hits. And I think it's hurting comics. The lack of honesty is making, you know, comics are going to start being a problem because nobody is actually looking at things and saying this needs changing or doesn't or whatever's good or bad, you know. So I just started this review a day, partly challenged by Gary Watson from Comics Anonymous, who also did it. Good on him. Well done, Gaz, because he's done the same.
Yeah, nice.
Review a day. Yeah. Good lad. And so me and him decided we'd do this sort of challenge. And I ended up, I think, mostly because of a bit of fucking jet lag insomnia and a bit of sort of, I got sent through a comic and I decided to review it straight away because I needed to get something done. I ended up doing 35 reviews and I did another four, which were to people who I just thought this is going to be, or from them or from me, this is going to be better as a sort of, if I looked at this as if, because I've been doing a bit of editing work recently, I've been chatting to editors. If I looked at this as if I was an editor, what I would change and what I would tweak sort of thing. I don't think you'll mind because he's mentioned it in a live stream, but Rick Jackson was one of them. And he and I had a really sort of interesting back and forth about what needed changing and what I thought was good and what was bad. And, you know, and he was really pleased sort of thing. So I probably, there's a couple of sort of facts and figures that came out of it. Sadly, and this is, I think, probably the world we live in, I think that the more critical, nothing was completely bad. I didn't write anything that was completely, I slipped into a bit of sarcasm, I will admit, on occasion. But nothing was completely an attack on a comic. You know, there's always good something. I always compare it to when you go and see your mate's band, or, you know, when you go and see your mate's play and you say, oh, these programs are really nicely done, when they ask you what you thought of it, you know.
Yeah.
Or the beer in that. You know, what do you think of my gig? Or the beer they were selling was brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, you like that. You know. So there was...
You were good in as much that you didn't fucking... We had a review for Comic House One, like, years ago, and it just took absolute pleasure in being as nasty as possible and not being constructive. You didn't do that at all. It was...
I tried not to, yeah. I tried my best.
You didn't. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, okay. Thank you, man. And I think as well as when you write something critical of anything these days on the internet, or, you know, constructively critical, and you post it, then you almost hold your breath, even if it's like, oh, I really like that film, and you say, nah, it didn't work for me, mate, that film.
Yeah.
You think, here we go. There's a chance this will turn into an argument. You know,
sleeves go up.
And... Yeah, it's a little bit, unfortunately, that's the world we live in now, isn't it?
You know?
But nobody came back at me angry. I was quite, you know, everyone was pretty impressed, actually.
Yeah.
So probably about a third of them were more critical than they were, you know, saying this is brilliant.
Yeah.
Maybe it's slightly more than that. But and of all of those ones, I got, everyone wrote back to me apart from three people who didn't reply. So okay. I made the point, I thought, if I'm going to be critical of a comic, I've got to have the bollocks on me to be able to say to them, I didn't like it, and this is why, and then the review's going up today. You know, I think you can't, the responsibility is of you not to just hide and not reply and post a review. I thought that's not the game, is it? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You've got to stand up for what you're going to say, I suppose.
Exactly. And if you've made that statement of saying this is what I'm going to do, you've got to follow through.
And for a lot of the people who submitted their comics, I said, look, this is what I'm doing. There'll be no fluff pieces. And I would send them the link to the original diatribe. And they all said, yeah, go ahead. One person said, yeah, this is what's needed.
Hmm.
And to be fair, his was the worst of the month.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. I do think that some people, just because we're in that world now of nothing's terrible and people tell people they're brilliant, I think we're in the world where there's a lot of delusion out there. I'll be honest with you. I think there are people who have a deluded sense of their own worth. And I put myself.
Talking about me, aren't you?
Just sexually. So I put myself in that as well. I really do. You know, and I take a hit for this because I'm like. I get very excited about comics and I write reviews about them and I sort of gush and it's all hyperbole and stuff like that. And I think I'm part of the, up until recently, was part of the problem for this. I genuinely do. You know, I take a punch in the face for that anytime. But I think people do think that they're brilliant, and some people, when there's a lot of factual mistakes in some of these, you know. There's a lot of things that we say that this clearly does not work for this reason, you know. You're solving a mystery with a fact that was never discovered previously in the story, you know, stuff like that. That just is, you know, there's no two ways about it.
Just the plot's just absolutely broken.
Yeah, or the dialogue doesn't work, or the spelling mistakes, or whatever it's going to be. And I think some people were like, well, one person who never replied to me basically wrote me a letter saying that he thought his comic was changing the world of science fiction. That's essentially what the email said.
Yeah,
right.
Which I think I sent to you guys as well.
Yeah, that's a claim. That's a claim.
Yeah, it was a big claim. Yeah. And I know that there'll be lots of sort of people saying to him, "No, it is brilliant." You know, I'm thinking, well, it's not. It clearly isn't. You know, I think. We'll take criticism different ways. I don't always take it very well myself, you know. Probably all of us are a bit like that.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely.
We've all read reviews where me and you two guys have ranted at each other, you know. To be fair, the two bad ones we had were written by crazy people.
So. Yeah.
but we did sort of say, oh, that's not fair. Oh, he's nuts. And then we've left it there, haven't we? Do you know what I mean? Mm. Some people do take to it badly. And I have to say, I didn't really find that. I think the main two main faults that I found, I think, were overwriting. I think it's a big mistake that people are doing now. I think they're writing too much, and it's a comfort blanket to have all that writing on the page. And they're forgetting that comics are a combination of words and drawings.
Is it a lot from? Do you find a lot of that is from people that are just starting out as well? Because I was waffling on and on. In fact, I still do. I'm trying. You know, it's an art to try and cut it down and to get it to say what matters.
Yeah, really strip it back. Mm. If you listen to AJ's interview last week, he says that. He said there was loads of words and he just like took loads out. Mm. And you don't need to say I'm kissing her deeply when you can see it in a picture.
Yeah.
Or he fired his gun. You can see him firing his gun.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that.
I've had this feedback on Vanguard issue one, and that was like one of the first times I've written a comic, and there's a lot of exposition in the first issue, and then the second one is all action because it's essentially set up. But that first one, got to hold my hands up, there's a lot of writing and a lot of exposition in it.
Yeah.
And if I did it again, I'm not sure if I'd do it the same.
Yeah. People are put off by big blocks of writing.
Yeah.
And it's a weird thing to say when the hobby is a reading and looking exercise, isn't it? But
it's
they
a
are
balance.
Off.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I think that's a big mistake. And I know Gary wrote to me as well and said, look, that's something he's found this month as well. Like, really is. And especially, like you say, Vince, people who are on their like first or second book, I think, you know, they there's that comfort blanket of thinking, well, perhaps they won't understand what it says in the drawing. I'll write it down. You know, you don't need.
Yeah.
You know.
I think a very important thing as well, it's going to be quite a big statement, I think, but a Kickstarter success does not mean that the comic's a success.
No, it's not.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean it's a critical success at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because people will get it as soon as they read it. If it's not very good, they're not going to come back.
Yeah, I think the excuse of, well, it's popular, it's got to stop because X Factor is popular, but it's shite.
That is a fallacy, isn't it? Ad popular fallacy, whereas when just because something's popular means it's good, that's not the case.
Not at all.
Yeah. No.
In fact, it's almost the opposite.
Yeah, okay.
It's getting to be, it's almost, yeah, there are, you know, like the Avengers movies are great and they're popular, but, you know, it's getting to the point now, if it's super popular, you can guarantee that it's aimed at the lowest sort of common denominator.
Yeah.
You know, it's just throwaway stuff. But yeah, so was that. And I think leading on from that writing thing, the other thing I found was people need someone else to look at it.
I agree.
So having an editor or even just having a mate to read through it or put an eye on it and stuff like that. I know it's something we used on our comic, didn't we? You had someone, D, didn't you?
Read
through it. And I think that's important. I think a lot of people kind of write stuff. A lot of people decide they're a writer, firstly. I think people think, I'm going to be a comic writer. They don't know enough about comics. So there is a language to comics. I think there is something to be said that you can't just go and write a comic without having read one. I think you do need to know how a comic works. You don't need to have read every comic out there, but you do need to have a decent understanding of how a comic works, you know. And I think that if you don't have that, then you really need someone to guide you. And there was a lot of people who, well, the worst example I think I've had of this was the one that we talked about, is the guy who wrote it as a screenplay and then made it into a comic.
That was I found that very difficult that someone had done that to their comic and was so upfront about it
and was almost it was almost like he saw it as a selling opportunity to say that's what he'd done.
Essentially, he'd done a comic. Was it a, at the end or the start of the comic, he said, "I've done this as a screenplay."
Yeah, he had he put it in the intro, which is really strange in a single issue comic, but series. And he said, "Look, it was almost like it was like a bragging right. Oh, this would have been a movie, but it didn't work out. So I've decided to. Oh, my alternative is I'll have to make it into a comic. Comics should never be the last resort. They should always be the first resort, as far as I'm concerned."
Yeah. But imagine reading that before imagine having that experience.
Yeah.
So I was about to go out with this model, but she jacked me in, so I'm going to go out with you. Oh, thanks. Do you know what I mean? You can't just say, "Oh, I'm selling down to you. I'm shifting gears down because I'm going to do this now for you." It's like that. It's just a terrible way to open up.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So I think the editing thing. I think people get someone to look at it. Get someone to look at the script before it's drawn.
Yeah,
that's one of the big mistakes I'm finding recently. Stuff I've edited is it's already started into the process, and you're like, "No,
there's fundamental flaws with the
actual
the plot and the way it's done." I mean, if you can, if the best kind of feedback is someone you can give to someone, you know, it's insightful and honest. I mean, you can have loads of people fawning over your work saying, "Oh, this is great, it's absolutely fantastic," but I'd rather have that one bit of insight that enables me to work on something and change it for the better. And from then on, my skill set of writing or drawing, whatever it be, is better for it. And I've had reviews that said X, Y, and Z is good, but Dan needs to work on faces or something. And I thought, okay, that's great, because then I've identified something I can work on to make what I'm doing better. If everyone just says, "Oh, it's great, yeah, it's lovely," it wouldn't change anything. What are you going
to
do?
You don't have to take everyone's advice either. You can pick and choose what you take. Because people sometimes feel that they have to say something, don't they?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Sometimes you just you have to kind of like put it. See, when I've had feedback before, I've gone back to people I trust and say, "Joe Bloggs has said this. What do you reckon?" And you can tell, yeah, maybe. And then you think, right, that they're on the money, and you put some time into rectifying that. But getting that kind of this little kernel of information that's something you can improve on and do better for yourself, I'd much rather have that than gushing reviews and sort of your parents sticking your picture up on the fridge and saying it's the best thing you've ever seen.
I know.
Do you know what I mean? Do you want to be that for the rest of your life?
If people gave honest reviews, we wouldn't have James Corden. Let's face it.
Yeah.
I think people genuinely think that all they're going to get is a good review as well. It's weird, isn't it? People out there who think that's all that's going to happen. I'll tell you what happened is I have met a number of people I've reviewed since as well.
Okay.
A couple of them I gave bad reviews to, and I've now met them, and they've all been fine. They've all been very adult about it. I met a couple of books that I got sent to me for reviewing by Europe Comics and another company, and I reviewed both them, and they had the mistakes in them, and they were mostly glorious, but there was a couple of things in them I'd have changed. And then I got sat down and interviewed one of them, and I thought, oh, okay. And these guys are professionals. So then, what they're going to do? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a weird one, isn't it?
It is a strange one, yeah.
From a demographics point of view, I wrote a little piece on that because I think the who's sending and why they're sending is interesting. Hmm. I got a lot of there's a lot of really good female editors out there, and I got sent work through from them. I didn't get any through from female creators. No female creators sent any comics through, which I don't, and I have not got a Scooby-Doo why. I don't know why that is.
It's hard to sort of extrapolate any kind of conclusion from that.
I don't know why that is.
It could be they just didn't see it, or
might be. Yeah. I'm tapped into a couple of ladies do comics, friends of mine, and this sort of thing. And so we've got a lot of female creators. I just didn't get any. It just might be that was the month where nothing was coming out. Yeah. So there's the distance. I got very few through. If you from the zine sort of crowd, didn't get anything through from them apart from one from John Tucker, which is a sort of zine thing that he gave me on the 200th. And I don't really include Avery Hill in that crowd because I think they're, I hate to say better, but I think they're more coherent, longer form comics.
Yeah,
So I didn't get any through from that crowd, which I found interesting. And I got a lot of first issues through, which I was pleased of, because it meant I didn't have to go back. If I've got issue 4, I'd have to go back and read issues 1 to 3. You know,
was there a lot of people kind of submitting their comics for review that were using it as a promotional tool to kind of say, "I've got a comic coming out on Kickstarter, could you give me a review?" Or
Yeah, there were. There was quite a lot of that. Frenemies from Monty Nero went live, I think, the day after I reviewed it, and I only got like a 14-page, 12-page piece of comics. Yeah, from him. There was a few that were on Kickstarter or about to be kickstarted and that sort of thing. There was a couple that they sent me the first issue because the second issue was being done and then kickstarted, so they wanted something and the first issue hadn't had any reviews. So, but I think from talking about demographics as well, worldwide, I've got people from all over the world sending them through.
That's
North
brilliant.
America, South America, Europe, England, you know, Great Britain sort of thing. I think from all over the place, which was good to see as well. You know, it's good that we've got a little bit of a reach around that as well.
I personally think people yearn for honest reviews.
I hope so.
Like in a day, in an age now, I can't speak.
Do you think a review is losing its meaning?
Mm.
Well, a lot of the time now, there seems to be puff pieces for marketing and promotional reasons.
This goes to movie reviews as well. Do you know what I mean? Like half the time, it's like, well, you're not really talking about the movie, are you? You're not really discussing anything that's. That's why a lot of movie journalism, in terms of reviews, I don't really pay attention to.
I don't listen to any reviews of movies. I listen more to what my mates say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Hellboy got terrible reviews, but I was chatting to Bob Fingerman about it and he loved it, and I'm now prone to see it.
Yeah.
Because I trust him more than I trust someone on Radio 2 or something, you know.
When a company gets like their reviewers in for a pre-screening so they can flood a site with positive reviews.
Yeah.
That not reflect because they know they're going to get a softball review of these people. But people always yearn for what that's why generally people find reviews that they like and their tastes are similar with and then stick with them because they know that what they say is akin to what they feel.
Yeah. I think that's one of the main problems is that people review stuff and they're like, 2000 AD, you'll get dropped off the comps list if you give them like a series of bad reviews and because it's not, I can see why they do it. It's not in their interest. Why would they be slam their comics? I think you're right. I think also because we're such a small pond now, we're reviewing people's comics we know.
Yeah.
Which is always a problem. A couple of clever fuckers wrote in and said, why don't you review your own comic? I said, well, you know, why don't you review your own mum? You know, something about that.
Snap.
Yeah.
So are you going to do this again, Tony?
I might give it another go next year. Yeah, I'm going to continue the honest review. It just won't be one every day.
Yeah.
Right. Do you know what? It's weird, though. What is it today? The second today, isn't it? I didn't write anything today, and I felt a bit bereft.
Okay.
Because I wasn't sitting down writing 800 words in a review. Yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
But you get yourself into a rhythm, don't you? It's like anything with writing or whatever. You get yourself into a rhythm. So when it stops, you're like, oh, you feel guilty. Yeah.
And it's, I think... Right, conveniently to use. I use an iPad with a keyboard, and I've got the Blogger app on the iPad. And I was writing in hotel because I was on holiday for a big chunk of this. Writing in hotel bars. I wrote on the plane. I wanted to tap into the Wi-Fi on the plane on the way home, and did it on there and stuff like that. There's always somewhere you can write, you know. And I was thinking of little sentences that I perhaps should have used in the review, and I was typing them. So where my iPad and my iPhone sync, the notes section, I was writing it in there, and I was able to add bits as I was going along, you know.
Yeah.
There's always some way to do it, isn't there? Yeah.
Talking reviews, I got a review from Claire Hemsworth during the week.
Oh, he did,
I was very kind of. I saw it in the morning, and I was like, I'm not going to click on that for a little while, and I just had to steel myself. It was a fantastic review, but whenever I get a review, I'm like, oh god, okay, just got to get myself into the right space to read this.
Yeah,
and it was lovely. So it was a great review. Over at the fandemoniumnetwork.com.
That's right, yeah. That's quite a big site, isn't it, I think?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, we met Claire at True Believers as well. She's
Oh, I don't think I met her.
She's on our wavelength. I'm sure you did.
Did I? Oh, yeah. Okay.
So you meet so many people, Tony. What are people to you?
Annoyances.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this has been an episode of Reflecting.
Yes, it's been a very reflective episode, but of course we still got the norms and we've got some recommendations to go, but have we got any shout outs this week?
Yeah, I've got a few.
You got a few?
Yeah, so LCAF is coming up this weekend. It's the 7th, 8th and 9th, so Friday, Saturday, Sunday of June, 12 p.m. to 7 p.m. because we don't like to get up early, and we like to drink heavily in the evenings. It's at the Round Chapel and Old School Rooms, 10 Glen Arm Road, London E5. Go to LCAF, ELCAF, East London Comics Art Festival, ELCAF.co.uk for the details. You can follow them on Twitter, ElcaFest. It is genuinely one of the most inspiring events I go to. If you can get hold of a postcard, it's got John McNaught's art on it, which is, I think it's actually like a piece of art itself, just the flyer.
I can't wait to see this one day. I'm not going to be able to make it this year, but next year it's definitely a must-have in my diary.
John, sadly, you're going to miss him. John's going to be there, and AJ from last week's going to be there. He's
give him a
excited.
Cuddle from me. Go on,
oh, will you, man? We need to get him on the show. I think we're lining him up, aren't we? Is that
we are. Yeah.
He's a good lad, he is. Yeah, amazing. Everyone who came to... We had a couple of guys came to the table at MCM. They said, right, he said, I want to buy something. It's Sunday afternoon. I want the book that you recommend and to me and Sam and Eola. Right, I want everyone to recommend me a book off this table that they like the best. And mine was always John's. John's or AJ's are the two that I think are the best. And loads of people went away with them. Yeah, I think he's a real big talent. Yeah. So there's workshops. There's like a market hall, like an MCM Comics Village equivalent. There's things for kids. There's little talks. They've got their own lager or craft ale, I suppose. there's a lot of drinking going on. It's a really good scene. I have to say, you'll come away wanting to draw. I genuinely think that, you know, on those sort of things. So yeah, come along. The other thing I've got, the Fragment is on Kickstarter.
Yes.
Adam Phelps' book. Adam's who lives very close to me and I did a bit of a comic mark trip with a couple of weeks ago, is really a creator on the rise, actually. I really like his stuff. He's got a real sort of Kirby feel to what he does. And he's just putting out books all the time and improving all the time. And this is well worth your back. And it's got a cheeky little print from Mr. Prolix as well, which looks good. So get on that. He's passed his amount, but it's still worth going on to Kickstarter. It's called The Fragment, The Cambridge File. There you go.
No, nice. Nice. I've got another Kickstarter, actually, which I've been meaning to talk about for the past couple of weeks. I keep forgetting it. It's got 10 days left to go, and it's called Drexler. It's a Kickstarter for Drexler issue 2, although as part of the Kickstarter, you can get issue 1 as well. So that's what they get. Yes, it's from Bob Sally, who's the writer, Nathan Kelly, who's the artist, who's been doing a lot of shouting out about it. He's the creator of Drexler and co-creator and artist of Snarl. Have you heard of the graphic novel Snarl?
I haven't. I know Bob Sally. I think we're friends on Facebook. Is he an American guy, isn't he?
Yes. Salvagers, Ogre, and Shelter That's Division right. he's written. Marco Pagnotti, who's a colourist, and HDE, who's letterer. That's the team. It's just a quality book. This was the second time around. It was one of those Kickstarters that they were trying to fund it. They didn't make it first time. Stepped back, cleaned off the campaign, came back with a lower goal. And then, you know, they've made the goal, so it's successful. But it's an American book, so obviously if you're in the States, it'd be easier for you to get a print copy. I've just got the digital. I think this would be right up the street of a lot of the people that listen to this show. The artwork, Nathan's artwork's just awesome. Super nice guy as well. It's one of those things that, you know, when I shout about it or when I pledged, I immediately got a Kickstarter message from him directly saying thank you.
Oh, good. I like you in that.
Yeah, that's quite nice. So, yeah, definitely check it out. I'm not going to spoil it for yourself. I think the design and stuff's kind of up Dan Street as well. Looks very cool.
Nice.
So, as well as that, I just want a big shout out to Lisa Wood, who's also known as Tula Lotte. Is that it? A thought bubble?
Tula Lotte.
Tula Lotte, yes.
Yeah.
She's been awarded the prestigious Bob Clampett Humanitarian Award at Comic-Con International. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So for all her work with Thought Bubble and beyond and stuff, she's one of those. So congratulations for that.
Yeah nice
Nicely
work.
Done.
Yes. Well
from
deserved.
From the Beverly Hillbillies. Weren't they the Clampets?
I used to watch that when I was a kid.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. But for those who don't know, Bob Clampett was a famed animator who designed popular characters as Porky Pig and Tweety Bird. There you go.
Oh, good. There you go.
So, yeah, huge congratulations for that. Hopefully, we'll be able to... Well, we're going to be talking more about Thought Bubble in the near future as it approaches. So, stay tuned.
We've got some plans around that as well, which you hear.
Yeah. So, big congrats to all of us from ACP.
Yeah.
To Lisa. Dan, do you have any shout-outs?
I did, and I can't fucking remember it. Should have written it down.
Well, I guess, as we were talking about MCM, just thank you to anyone who came up to the table.
Yes.
Loads of people. We met some great people, didn't we?
Yeah.
If you took a card, if you had a chat, you know, whether you bought something or not, it doesn't matter. Thank you for coming to talk to us. And if you started listening to the show, I think you know by now that it's a load of old bollocks.
that's our selling
what we do
point.
Best
yeah it's what we do best, and as well as recommending some comic books, so shall we get on and do that? Dan, do you want to take it away this week?
Well, I kind of messed up. Something happened today, and I was in the process of doing a review, but I kind of got waylaid. But
drama to
yeah,
them, yeah.
yeah, I was getting stuck into. I got sent through. I bought two comics for my son. Late Nights of Sense of Steel, issue 1 and 2, and that came through early in the week. And I was reading them, but I haven't had a chance to put a full review together. So I'll be doing that next week. But they look absolutely top.
Yeah, they are good. I got them as well. They're really good.
Is that the print copies you guys got?
Well, I got two. I got one before, but yeah.
I didn't back the first one, so I think I backed it digitally, but I didn't back print, so I got print this time.
Cool.
Nice.
I think it's the last one on my Kickstarter before my Kickstarter hiatus kicked in.
Ah, yes. I'm on one of them.
We missed late here at MCM, didn't we?
Yeah.
Was he there?
No. He didn't come. I think was he going to come along and then didn't. I got a feeling there might have been some kind of football related incident that he went to.
When you say incident, he just went to a football match, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a big Millwall fan.
I know that ain't true. I'm trying to wind him up.
Oh dear. Now I know what Tony's is going to be, so I'm going to go first before the tone drops like a bass line.
Like a Chinese meal talking about number twos.
Oh God, yeah. Unbelievable.
On that Saturday night.
What
did you say to me? You turned around and said to me.
Who?
Was this basic game around telling stories of scat. And there was a massive table of people from MCM, like the organisers. And
what kind of world are we lived in when I'm the one that's saying, this is wrong?
This is wrong. Like, this is really grim or something like that.
Yeah, I can't believe we're laughing in a restaurant. And it wasn't quiet, folks. There were some disgusting stories. Yeah. I was the member of the family that was really embarrassed to be around.
Chris Ember had a good one about his son.
Yeah.
In school. That was a great one.
Yeah.
That was good.
No,
that was a good one. Classic.
Anyway, before Tony's recommendation, my book is one I picked up at MCM, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, I was walking past Steve Tanner. I caught up with Steve Tanner, and he said to me at one point, stop talking to me and go see the guys from Skies of Fire. And I didn't know what this book was, so I ventured forth and looked at it, and God damn you, Steve, I went and bought it. Skies of Fire, for those that don't know, and quite simply put, it's like a huge adventure featuring massive diesel-powered airships and basically dueling airships, and there's politics and all kinds of stuff. It's not historical. It's clearly a lot of world building happening in these four. And what I picked up was the collection of the first four issues in a nice oversized sort of hardback that reminded me of Nobrow books. It's even got, you know, the spines of Nobrow books have that sort of
material spine to it. Yeah, I love that. Yeah.
And it's got that sort of cover to it. And the cover has like a giant blue airship flying over what looks like a sort of Tuscan sort of landscape, which is beautiful. And that's one thing I will say about this book. It's absolutely fucking stunning. And I finished reading it today, and it's amazing. It's created and written by Vincenzo Ferrero and Ray Chow. Art is by Pablo Pepino. Colours by Brian Valenza. Lettering by Nick J. Shaw and Zach Sam. There's a few other people on board as well that did variant covers, and someone who did the trade cover. This is stunning, this book. I love it when I go to a show and I discover something that, you know, maybe a lot of people do. As soon as I said Skies of Fire, there's probably a few people listening going, oh yeah, I've read that, that's brilliant. I knew nothing about it, and it reminded me of discovering a Europe comics book. Or it's that sort of quality of art and world building, and it's cinematic, it's stunning. There's four issues in this book, but in between each issue, there's sort of there's prose pieces. There's old timey newspaper articles. There's files, so that there's so much going on. You know, I haven't read all the prose stuff yet. When I read a comic normally, if it's broken up by prose pieces, I won't necessarily read the prose pieces. I'll read the sequentials and then go back. Does that make sense?
Depends what it is, but sometimes
Alan Moore, League of whatever it was, Gentlemen. Yeah. I was fucking hell.
And some of that with the Garth Ennis sort of Punisher stuff as well. You have those sort of Punisher sort of diaries, don't you, in the back, you know, the files and stuff. I've gone back afterwards. And there's so much to look at, you know, because it's not just the same sort of prose stuff as well. There's letters from emperors, because we're talking about like a sort of a regal society, and there's like sky pirates, and there's lots of politics going on, but it's easy to follow, and there's lots of like backstabbing and so good. I wish I could describe it better, but I can't. The only thing I would say, maybe the only niggle I have is the cover art itself for this collected trade. I mean, it's a beautiful image, but I think it could have been something more striking, a bit more sort of in your face.
Oh, you said this to me on Sunday. I remember you telling me about this then.
Yeah,
I think you're right, man. Yeah.
And it's got some sort of variant covers in the back that are absolutely stunning. They're including like the classic sort of, you know, "We want you for the war," that sort of finger pointing poster.
Okay. Yeah.
There's the main character is this Captain Helen Pierce, who's like a no nonsense sort of admiral kind of person who's running. She's basically gathers together this ragtag sort of ship to go into this sort of no man's land in the sky. So she basically has a load of imperial sort of officers with her, as well as some sort of ne'er-do-wells, and they have to make their airship not look like the traditional sort of imperial airships. They've got to look dodgy, you know, so they can get past everyone else. And there's lots of, you know, so you've got the crew don't get on. There's lots of backstabbing. It can be quite brutal in places. It starts off and immediately there's an airship, like the bad guy airship turns up and just takes out lots of people, and it's pretty brutal. When I read it, I thought, butcher it like this.
I did take a brief look at it when you brought it over, and it looked fantastic.
Yeah, it's a stunning book. I think they've been doing Kickstarters for the sort of single issues, and when I researched it a bit, they just kickstarted the fifth issue in April, and they were looking for, it was one of those ones where they're looking for $6,000 and they made 28, so that's for an issue 5, so it's got a following. And it's well worth checking out. You can get the digital issues on Comixology, I see, for like $1.99. I got the hardcover collection from them. If you want to find out more about it, the publisher is Mythopoeia, which I'm going to have to spell for you. MYTHOPOEIA.US.
Mythopoeia.
Mythopoeia.
You reckon? I don't know. It's
Mythopoeia. That's what I wanted to say, and I said it wrong. Mythopoeia. but if you go there, you'll find some of their other books as well. They've got a book called Glow, which is also like looks absolutely stunning. Go check them out, because I met the creators at MCM as well. I think the writer Vincenzo was the guy I spoke to.
And that's weird. You both got the same first name.
That's all. I always know when I've got posts from you because it says Vincenzo on the. But in all seriousness, these are great creators who I think we definitely need to speak to in the future on this show, because they just seemed, talking to them as well, I think this says a lot about, you know, convincing me, because I coughed up for a hard cover, and yeah. I'm notoriously tight-fisted. I'm notoriously tight-fisted, so this was a treat.
What do you mean? I'm not getting it for free. I'm going to review this.
Yeah. Oh, I've got a podcast, don't you know? Within the first 2 minutes, I thought, I like these creators. They're nice people who just clearly love what they're doing, and they love this world that they're building. So that already sold me. So definitely check them out, and hopefully we'll speak to them more in the future. So it's another one of those ones where I think I'm going to have to post some panels.
Yeah,
like on on the group chat.
Yeah, I need to see what this looks like properly.
Because it's stunning. It's one of those, you know, like a Europe book or a Christian Wild Goose art where the background is just so, it's ridiculously detailed, and you don't know where they find it. It's that kind of art. It's next level. It's next level. It's beautiful stuff. Yeah.
Well, it's deranged. Everyone knows that.
Yeah. speaking of deranged.
Ah, what a nice segue. Right, I'd like you two guys to open your WhatsApp and look at the picture I just sent you, if possible.
This is happening live on air.
This is great, isn't it?
I did see that.
Yeah, I see you sent a little reply to it when they sort of open-eyed emojis.
Yes.
Now, that is a picture of Chester Brown, taken from the inside back cover of The Playboy, which I picked up the other day and thought, oh, The Playboy, maybe it's about a gad about town. You know, going to casinos and meeting ladies. It's not. It's a book about masturbation. So I thought I'd review it on this show. The
was it a load of wank? Let's find out.
Yes. Thank you. Not even planned. We didn't even plan that one. That was good. So it's done in like a paperback format, which I kind of liked. I like that it's maybe like a sort of manga format. It's like it's sort of the size. It's the cover's sort of, I hate to say, bendy cardboard. I'm going to describe it as. So it's got that sort of, you can almost roll the book up and put it in your back pocket. But it's the size of a thick paperback pulpy novel, which I kind of liked. It's $10.99. I bought it in Gosh. It's 224 pages, black and white. And it's from Drawn and Quarterly. Now, the majority of this came out in the 90s in comic form, but there's some extra stuff, some annotations, there's some extra bits in the back that weren't included, and there's an extra tiny bit of story at the back, which is a trade, basically, when you think it like that. You know, it's a trade that's from Yummy Fur, all the series. Yummy Fur came out literally 20 years ago. Now, do you remember the book I previously reviewed about by Chester called Paying for It?
Yes.
Which was a series of his, he had documented all his experiences with many, many prostitutes over the years.
Yes.
And he was a big fan of prostitutes. So it is painfully, you know, it's just, you just read it and it's like, oh God, who is this guy? It's almost like that, you know.
Okay.
And I think you will witness that the picture of him, he doesn't quite look sane in that picture, does he?
No,
there's a kind of, you know, imagine that like the central insert of a kind of a book on a serial killer.
Yes, a little bit.
You know.
Yeah, yeah.
No offence, Chester.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm about to give you an incredibly good review because I did enjoy it, but it is very, very strange. So almost to the point where I find it almost self-destructively honest.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it starts in 1975 when Chester was in his teens. And he is obsessed with Playboy magazine, which is where the name of the book comes from. And so he goes and buys one. He buys his first one. But throughout the story, what he's got him as traveling through his life, but it's being commented on by a small version of Chester who's got like little bat wings and flies around the pictures talking about what's going on. It's one or two images on a page, and that's how it's done. Some of the images are actually quite small on the page. Sort of central single images, and I'll talk about a couple of them in a minute. But it's about him being obsessed with Playboy, being obsessed with making sure that nobody finds out he buys it or reads it, and basically about him whacking off. That's it. But accompanying those is the emotions that follow him around with this. And he's quite a reasonably dark individual. He does buy his porn magazines, like not like us. Well, we used to find them in railway sidings, you know. in a bush. And and he gets real sort of shame. And he's really embarrassed about it all. But he's very sort of OCD-driven around it all. To the point where he remembers the date that he buys. Even when writing this comic, he remembers the date that he bought books and which issue they were and stuff like that. So kind of like a comic collector, I suppose. Be warned, if you're going to read it, it really does go there. And it's a lot of it is about him smuggling the magazine in and out of his house. And he becomes sort of totally obsessed with how, so he does, he enjoys the book, put it that way. And then he decides he needs to get rid of it. And he starts off doing stuff like hiding it in the woods. And then he found a sort of the side of a wooden box and he hides it under that. And then he digs a hole. And then he tries to burn it, but he discovers that he can't burn it because it leaves the spine. So he's afraid that his family will find the spine of a porno magazine in the ashes of their fire and stuff like that. And he's totally obsessed with it. There's a couple of moments where he's got rid of it in the woods and he's worried that he's being watched by, because he realizes that he's getting rid of it near an old school teacher of his old school sort of thing. But he also feels very sort of disgusted with himself. But what the book does is it doesn't really show a close-up of him doing it, but it shows the way he does it. So I don't know what your preferred position is, lads, but do you know what I mean? He's got like a kitchen chair. And if you imagine this, he's got a kitchen chair, which he lays down on top of. So his chest is on the chair. The magazine, his head is looking over the top of the chair and the magazine's on the floor. And he is sort of pleasuring himself on the other side of the seat of the chair. Does that make sense? So it's pointing down to the ground. Now, he doesn't use a, let's call it the traditional hand motion. Imagine, you know, the praying emoji you get on your phone.
Yes. Yeah.
He puts it between his hands like that.
Okay.
He and said because
of mingly.
Yeah. And he says, are we really going into this?
And he talks about that later. There's a lot of annotations in the back, and he talks about it. And he says, okay, I didn't really know how to do it until someone did the motion as sort of to exaggerate a sentence, or, you know, say he was a bit of a wanker, you know, kind of thing, like we would over here. Chester's American, but he does that. And then he realized what he was doing wrong for all these years, you know. And he's totally compulsive around it. And he took this. There's a sort of series of things in the back where he talks about what he was doing. He actually suspects that he may be racist at one point, because he says he buys a magazine, gets it all the way home. He accidentally bumps into some neighbours and has to sort of hide it behind his back. And they say, "What have you just bought, Chester?" And he says, "Oh, nothing, just some comics," you know. And he gets it home, gets himself ready, and then realises that the centrefold is a black woman. And then, like, desperately sort of has this sort of self-loathing because he thinks he's a racist because he didn't like her how she looked as much as some of the other whiter models. It's very strange, really strange.
So brutally honest.
Oh, painfully.
Yeah.
I genuinely think that it's almost him torturing himself by putting it out there.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you're kind of fessing up to a bit of an issue you got there.
Yeah.
That sounds like an addiction in a way.
Yeah. Famously, have you ever seen a movie called Short Bus? It's a sort of a woman who discovers her own sexuality.
I've not seen it. I've heard of it.
Yeah, well, that was his girlfriend.
Okay.
The woman who made that and stars in it was his girlfriend for many years, and he split up with her. And but in the back of it, he says stuff like, sometimes I prefer masturbation to sex. And it's all this sort of thing, right? Just bleak. I can see a direct line between, if anyone's ever read Portrait of an Artist or something like that by Joyce, there's a direct line of that to this sort of, so confessional. It's almost like a car crash to watch, because it's so
kind of brutal honesty. I don't think I'm capable of doing that, you know, in a comic.
Some things are too personal, aren't they? People look at us strangely enough with the comics we do at the moment. And he does. I think
that's a shame, Dan. I was really looking forward to your wank diaries.
Dan's wanking diaries. I'd read that.
Usually involves driving, so driving around the streets late at night. Don't do that, folks. It's very dangerous.
Unless you're in an automatic.
Yeah.
And also, this was back in the days when it was easier. It was more difficult to get to pornography. I mean, people can look at pornography on their phones now, can't they? But back then, you actually had to go into a shop and buy a magazine. And it was like, is it Bananas, that Woody Allen film, where he goes in and he buys one porn magazine and two other magazines, he puts them between them, and then he goes to the counter and takes ages to get served. And then the bloke behind the counter goes, "Hey, Joe, how much for Big Boobs Monthly?" You know, like that.
I had to, back in the day when I was doing a paper round, I had to deliver one.
Did you?
Yeah, it was in like the bag. Like, it had a bag, and the only thing you could see was like, if it was like a square where the price was or something.
Right, okay.
So there was no ripping it open and have a quick gander at that.
But, is that what you call it, Dan? You call it a gander, do you?
We're quite brazen to have it delivered by a paper boy. I mean, that slipped in with the Sunday Times or whatever.
I could imagine that person was single, let's face it.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So it's an interesting experiment, and I kind of like that there are people out there taking that chance. And after, I did see quite a lot of the same thing as I was reviewing comics. You know, I wanted something that had a bite to it. Now, I think that's one of the things that I think lacked in some of the comics I reviewed.
Yeah.
There was no real edge to it. And I think I went almost the other way and wanted something that was just
fucking brutal.
Yeah. And that's kind of where I went with it. And Chester's famous for this. He's famous for being a very strange. I mean, you meet Daniel Klaus is actually quite a nice, friendly, vaguely normal looking guy, and you have a conversation with him, you have this like very interesting conversation with him, but his comics are fucking freaky. But I don't know what it would be like to meet Chester when I know so much about him after reading Paying for It and the Playboy. It's a weird one. I do recommend it. I sort of went backwards and forwards and whether I would say I'd recommend this, but I do recommend it. Now, if you listen to this, you know what you're getting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, it's and it's not badly drawn. There's an underground comics feel to it. You know, it's not overly drawn, but he knows what he's doing. He can draw, and there's a couple of examples in the inside inside covers. He's done more realistic drawings of the women in these magazines. Mm. There's no like huge amounts of nudity in this book. It's not like that. That's not the point. Yeah. You know, but the and they are very well drawn. You know, they're like paperback cover. 1950s sort of paperback cover faces,
yeah, gotcha.
Sort of super glamorous, yeah. Sort of cool retro thing going on with them. But yeah, it's interesting. So it's from Drawn and Quarterly, $10.99. I got mine in Gosh. It's one of those table books in Gosh. It's worth a look at. Yeah, wow, I think I actually prefer this to paying for it. Actually, I think paying for it is just too long. The torture goes on too long.
Mm.
But this one you can read it in an hour easily, I would say. That's my one.
And there speaking of the torture going on too long, don't worry, folks. This episode's almost over. No, of course. plenty of great comic books for you to check out, as always. As well as, it was just nice to talk to the lads properly, away from a convention.
Yeah. One subject we didn't get into, just thinking about it, was the effect of the MCM show and the kind of waves of negativity coming out that affected the kind of... the community as a whole, because we've had messages about people who weren't even there and like the feeling of like, oh, fucking hell.
That was really interesting. I found that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think you can see MCM as a reflection of the industry in a way, but I don't think you should do.
No, I don't think
it's so divorced from that scene. I think.
Especially, I mean, we've seen firsthand, like, you know, whether it be comic events, you know, small events, big events, you know, these little one day turn up in a comic book shop, or like, you know, something as silly as just a drink and draw or R200th or something like that. All of these events that just inspire you, you know, just
that passion and energy is there.
There's always going to be something. There's always going to be something that will inspire you. So even if you get knocked down by an event because it wasn't quite what you thought it was going to be, just keep going to the next one and keep making comics.
Yeah. And I think that's how hard. For me, the next one is El Cafe. It's a whole different ball game.
Yeah.
And then after that, I'm going to MacPow. And then after that, I'm going to Glasgow. None of them will be the same.
No.
Yeah.
No.
So.
No. Yeah, but they're all going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
It's not about how hard you can hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. That quote.
Who's that from?
I don't know. I think he absolutely murdered it.
Yeah.
Is that from Anthony Joshua?
Oh, dear. Yes. So thank you for listening, folks. Like I say, we've had a competition this week. We've had a real reflective debate. And speaking of debate, there was Tony's recommendation as well.
Yeah.
So if there's anything in the show you wanted to us to expand on, or just get in touch, or give us your competition entries, please
email us.
Email them to awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. I shall then forward them to the guys and to Pete from Comic House for us to... judge who's going to be the winner of the first week's competition.
We'll do on the socials as well, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. On the socials as well, yeah. What was that? Yeah.
That was a gangster.
What, mate? Yeah. Want to buy what?
That was real. That was real.
That was real talk. Butcher doesn't do anything else except real talk. You can follow us.
He's saying that from Bill Mayer.
Oh, God, don't start him. Anyway. You can follow us on Twitter @TheAwesomePod, where we'll be posting up future guests. We've got some guests lined up for the next few weeks. So, we haven't, apart from Tony's going to be at LCAF, but me and Dan haven't got a show for quite some time. So we're just...
Yeah, see me if you're at LCAF. Come say hi, because I'm going to be on the table a bit selling the books, but I'll also be wandering around doing interviews and stuff as well.
Lovely. So, so follow us @TheAwesomePod, where, who knows, we might do a poll. No, we probably won't for a little bit, but... Sorry, Tom. If you do the Book of Faces, go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. Likewise, if you do groups on Facebook, join the group Awesome Comics Talk, because there's no hard selling of anything there. It's people talking about comics, about making comics, going to conventions. Lots of great discussion there as well. It's no bullshit, which is one thing we're very pleased about this group. It's the best one on Facebook. In fact, it's the only reason I go on Facebook, really. Thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, leave a review, Subscribe helps get the word out and spread the word about indie comics. Also, if you listen to us on any of the networks, whether it be on Spotify, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, what other networks are we on, Tony?
Well, there's one recommended to me by Chester Brown, which says Pod Say No to Chest Enhancements.
So if you listen to us there, then thank you very much.
That loaded pause.
Yeah, that's my favourite bit.
Yeah.
Yes, so thank you for listening to us. Whether you are a regular listener, a new listener, or basically you just stumbled across us by accident and for some reason you're still listening, thank you very, very much. Where can people find us on Twitter, etc.? Gents, Tony.
Ezohyz on Twitter, or neveronanything.blogspot.co.uk for review month. Have a read.
Yes, well, we'll put a link in the show notes for that as well. So, yeah, nice handy link. Dan?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com. I've got the last two pages of issue 16 going up this week.
This is momentous, absolutely momentous.
This next one's going to be a banger.
It's going to be a banger.
Yeah.
I tell you what.
Are you playing a game, you two, that I'm not aware of?
No, I tell you what, I'm not aware of it either. He's become so street, hasn't he? That's what MCM did to him.
Yeah, it's just ruined him.
Just absolutely ruined him. But you should check out Vanguard because it's absolutely brilliant. Okay. So there you go. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Jester Diablo, and you can find out more about my comic at theredmassfrommars.com. Thank you for listening, everyone. Go forth, have a brilliant. We made it through MCM. We survived. Yeah. So now on to the next show. So yeah, like Tony said, say hello to him at LCAF.
Yeah,
if you're gonna be there. And until then, just go forth, read loads of comics, stay safe, and as always, what do they do, Dan?
Stay awesome.
I didn't put the pressure on you this week, Tony. You're right.
I know, it's nice for you.
Thanks.
Feeling it though.
Would you want to say it anyway?
No.
Oh, well. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
See ya.